Pod. Pod. Pod.
Welcome back to episode 101 of Say Who Say Pod. We're on to the next 100. The last 100 are behind us. We've moved on. We're looking forward. It's all about the future now. Danny. He's Danny O'Neill. I'm Christian Capel. Coming to you on our usual Thursday, which the Huskies are not practicing on because apparently somebody realized the NFL draft starts on Thursday, and Thursday's practice was moved to Wednesday. So there you go.
Pretty big day for the University of Washington when it comes to if they are in fact the 33rd team. It seems like they've eased off of the 33rd team marketing push, but maybe we'll get a fresh dose of it after the draft today.
I think every year that the NFL draft is basically like an advertisement for Alabama's program or Ohio State's program, and that, you know, hey, how do these teams recruit? Just sit any 16, 17 year old down in front of the screen on draft day and look at who goes in the first round. And it's, you know, it seems like every other guy's from Bama or Ohio State or Georgia. And I don't know if people are going to come away from this draft, at least Thursday, feeling any kind of way about Washington in a similar manner. But I do think that it will perk some ears up that, like, yeah, this was, you heard all college football season about Washington. They were, you know, one of the primary stories of the 2023 college football season. They made it to the national championship game. And here they've got a number of guys going in the first round, potentially two top 10 picks, maybe three guys in the top half of the first round, depending on whether you believe the buzz around Michael Penix Jr. I don't know. That's been so fascinating to me, because it's like all season, if you watch Washington, it's like, yeah, Michael Penix Jr. is really good. Yeah, he's a Heisman candidate. Yeah, he's going to throw for a million yards and make throws and that not a whole lot of other quarterbacks can make, but he's not a first rounder. And now it's like, he might be a first rounder.
It typically happens at that position, and quarterback is the most reliable to move up between even the combine and draft day, but certainly from the end of the college football season through draft day, teams talk themselves into quarterbacks. It's become increasingly true over the past 6-7 years. Teams are more willing to draft quarterbacks higher because of the value at that position. And I could get into a long, drawn out economist fueled argument about the value for doing that, and that the reward, if you get a starting quarterback on a rookie wage scale salary, what that allows you to do, that essentially the upside of hitting there makes it worth the risk at quarterback more than any other position, significantly more than any other position. The reality is it takes one team becoming convinced this is the guy we need, and that quarterback is the one position you can talk yourself into in that way. It's the one where you can decide it doesn't really matter what other people think. It's how we feel. That's how you get Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow being first round picks. There's the consensus across the NFL on both of those guys was back half of the draft. If you took the average assessment of your NFL scout / GM, the personnel side, they would have, the average would have been in the back half of the draft. Both ended up going in the first round because quarterbacks get decided on differently. And that's become more and not less true over the past few years. I don't know if Penix will go ahead of Bo Nix. I think you could see both of those guys going higher than people suggested. And I don't expect either one will be available after the second round.
The Bo Nix thing is interesting. Because we've talked about it before, and everybody's talked about it. The knock is that he didn't really throw the ball downfield, and that a lot of his passing yards were yards after catch. And that was kind of the way Oregon's offense was designed. Don't think he lacks for arm strength. Thought he did a fine job throwing it down the field when they asked him to. And he does have, I don't know that he's a great deal more athletic than Penix. Like, I don't know that his top end speed is better or anything, but I think he's proven to be like a more effective runner, a more durable runner. I don't know that any NFL team is going to ask him to run to the degree that Oregon did, although he didn't really do a ton of that his senior year, as his senior year. I think that there's a realistic chance that whoever takes JJ McCarthy ahead of Michael Penix Jr. ends up looking very silly a few years down the road. The injury discourse on Penix is a little strange to me. I would get it more if he'd come out last year and, okay, so he had one great, you know, amazing healthy season, but he still got those four season-ending injuries. But I think putting two healthy seasons together and, you know, healthy enough, he didn't miss any games. You can speculate on whether he was banged up at times. Obviously, he was hurt coming off the field of the national championship game, but there don't seem to be any long-term concerns there. If it's just a guy who's had season-ending injuries, some rotten injury luck to a certain extent, or, well, he wasn't playing behind a great offensive line at Indiana. He didn't ever get an offseason there to, you know, build back up and get in great shape like he was able to before both of his seasons at Washington. He's not a guy who's just been like, it's just always something, you know, like, he can't get past these nagging hamstring injuries or, you know, a tweaked ankle or knee or something, you know, like, Michael Penix is just always, this guy's always hurt. The history is a little bit different. I think the reporting around it too has been that, like, the medical isn't a super huge concern. It sounds like, I mean, based on the Adam Schefters of the world and all that, that he came out of the combine in relatively good shape as far as what teams thought of his medical history. So I don't know, man. We watched him put up a lot of yards and make a lot of great throws, and it makes sense to me that he's getting discussed as a first rounder, even though that hasn't always been the narrative on him.
Yeah, I did have a very funny interaction that I think is very typical of what happens when a player enters the draft cycle. And there's a guy, his name's Corey Kinnon, and he works in the Cleveland area. We follow each other on Twitter. I've always found his perspective to be, I would say, fairly interesting. Like, I've enjoyed him. He made the observation this past, I guess it was a couple weeks ago, where he said, and I'm going to read the exact exchange, "I'm not sure where the notion that Penix Jr. has a big arm came from. Like, it's a B-tier arm and probably the sixth biggest in the class. Williams, May, McCarthy, Rattler, Milton all have superior arms. Can't have a, quote, big arm, end quote, and not be in the top tier of your own class." I responded, "So I'm a UW alum, so I'm perhaps biased." I then put the highlights in from last year's game between Oregon and Washington. And I said, at the 6'10 mark of the clip, he throws the ball 50 yards downfield from release to where it lands, perfectly placed as he's about to get hit. It's a huge throw. Then at 7:40 is the throw to Taj Davis, which is 35 yards downfield, but it's from the opposite hash outside the numbers. It's an absolute fastball. And so, and then I followed it up because I was like, just my two cents, not trying to troll or shame you. Like, so it's like, I'm not, I did these as responses. It wasn't QT. Like, I'm not attempting to grandstand and like rub my nuts in his face. And he doesn't respond. And at that point, I'm like, okay, is this really about the actual appraisal of the player? Because I don't think the question of whether Penix has a quote-unquote big arm is really a question. He's got, absolutely can make every bit of the throws. And in fact, his ability to generate velocity without setting and stepping into the throw is unique, in my opinion. But it's like, well, yeah, he doesn't really have a big arm. And I was like, okay, like, what is this? Is this an actual discussion of what we've seen on the field? Not really. It's everybody having their take on which the quarterback should be. And if that's, it's not a very interesting discussion at that point if everybody just gets their own pet thing.
Yeah. the draft needs to happen if that's the point we're at with the discourse. Like, come on.
Am I wrong? And I fully, and probably in all things when it comes to the draft, I'm very willing to admit what I don't know. Or to say something like, Joe Milton's got an enormous arm. I don't think he's really a quarterback prospect, certainly not someone you take in the first two rounds because of the questions that go about his ability to aim that arm. But man, if you're going to say I'm worried about Penix's injury history or his age, I can kind of understand that. The other parts of it, I'm just like, okay, I just, you're looking for a reason not to pick him, which is what NFL teams do. But I don't know why as fans, we feel like to pick our favorites in that way.
Yeah, like the, you know, concerns about him being able to throw over the middle, or he doesn't use the whole field, or, you know, he had great protection his 2 years at Washington. So, you know, do we really know how he's going to fare against a consistent NFL pass rush? And everyone watched that Michigan game and saw, you know, the pressure in his face, and he didn't really handle it well. He threw high, or he panicked, whatever. Those were all real concerns. His arm isn't. I mean, that's just silly. And now you want to get into like release angle, and he's got kind of a funky release and all that stuff. I've seen people point that out. I think that's a little bit more valid. I don't know how valid. I think some of it is just bias because he's left-handed. But I mean, if we're to the point of the draft, the process where we're questioning Michael Penix Jr.'s arm strength, then it's like, let's just get this over with. We've analyzed enough. We've talked about the draft enough. It's time for it to happen, if that's where the conversation has gone.
I wrote about this morning. The NFL draft is one of the most irrational things that I've seen in sports, in that it is a pretty proven sort of way to get value out of the draft. Like, economists, not talent evaluators, economists have studied it and have consistently for 20 years now come up with the conclusion of the best ways to get value out of the draft, and it is always to trade down. And this doesn't reflect anything other than the uncertainty in parsing players toward the top of the draft. That out of your first round picks, 5 years from now, 8% of them will be out of the league, not playing, not on a roster, and 9% of them will have made a Pro Bowl. So out of your first round picks, the guys, you have as much a chance of having a guy wash out, what would be considered a bust, as you do of getting a Pro Bowl player in that time. And then the second part is that if you look at the success of a given drafted player compared to the next guy at his position selected. So QB2 versus QB3, or linebacker 5 versus linebacker 6. The likelihood that that player that's drafted earlier, the one slot earlier, is going to have a better career than the guy selected later is 52%. So it's a coin flip. If it was a perfectly predictable, logical, or what economists call a rational market, it would be 100% of the time. You would get the player who's better first. It's 52%. A coin flip is 50%. And what that tells you is not that first round picks aren't valuable, or that hey, you have just as much a chance of getting, it doesn't matter which linebacker you pick in the draft, whether it's the first guy alphabetically, you have an equal chance. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that when you talk about parsing the difference in success between similarly rated prospects, NFL teams, by and large, are not better than each other at it. In general, you might as well flip a coin when it comes to those things. And instead of leaning into that uncertainty, teams seem to think like, I've got the magic bullet. And then draft analysts follow suit with, oh, there's this huge difference if you're going to go off a cliff if you don't get one of these three receivers, when everything we know says that it's generally up to things that a team probably can't control how similarly rated players are going to play out.
What's the over under for Washington players taken in the first round that you would feel most comfortable betting on, because like Odunze and Fautanu are locks.
Correct.
But then there's, I'm going to say there's three others who could go in the first, but are much less certain.
Oh, really? See, I think it's one other. If I was going to set the number, it's 2.5, and whether or not Penix is three. Who else do you think has a chance of going in the first?
There's been some chatter around Roger Rosengarten.
Uh-huh.
And just depending on need and how the receiver market shakes out, I think Jalen Polk could sneak in there. That's the dark horse. That's the unlikely outcome. So I wouldn't bet money on it. But like the stars aligning and everything going perfectly outcome for Washington would be like a tippy top absolute max of five. And I don't know, like there have been five different Washington players appear in somebody's first round mock draft at some point. Rosengarten and Polk being the two who are kind of on the fringe, but it does seem like Rosengarten in particular has kind of pushed his way into that conversation at least.
I feel pretty confident that Rosengarten is going to go in the second or by the end of the second, but I think I'd still set the number at 2.5. Would you go over at 2.5?
I'd take the over at 2.5. Yeah, I would feel comfortable that one of those three would go.
Yeah. So the answer then would probably be that over under is at 3.5, because I'd go over on 2.5 too. That might be my Husky Homer showing, but yeah, that sounds solid. I think Jalen McMillan's going day two. I do believe Jalen McMillan's going to be off the board by the end of the third round. I think he's going in the first three rounds. And then I think my questions are, is it Braylon Trice next or Ulofoshio? And my worry is that Braylon Trice is going to be the guy that tumbles a little bit in this draft. And so I think I'd probably take Ulofoshio as the sixth Husky player to get picked.
I'd still feel comfortable putting Trice ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
I just think his Ulofoshio's size will scare some teams off. And he had a great combine.
Yep.
He's a, you know, A+ football mind character guy. No concerns there for any teams. He had the season I think he wanted to have as a senior, finally put together a full year. He's another guy who, you know, yeah, he had some season-ending injuries, but you know, he's not a guy who's like durability I would necessarily question. Mm-hmm. You know, either he's available and he's ready to play, or he's out for the season. You know, not a guy who's just like kind of he's underperforming because he's always hampered by something. So I don't like Trice is one where if you just put on the tape and watch him play, you could believe he's going to play and have a nice long career in the NFL. I mean, just because like he can always lean back on that motor and that effort, and if he can be in the backfield as consistently as he was in college, even last year when he didn't have the production, wasn't necessarily getting the sacks, like there'll always be a place for him. But yeah, I mean, I think he worked out better probably at his pro day than he did at the combine. He said he was fine with his 40 time from the combine, but that he was sick. Like, sounds like he had a stomach bug and was just, you mentioned, I think on our podcast after the combine that he just didn't look well. And he wasn't.
Yeah.
So good call on that.
My worry was that he tried to get light, and because that is the value at defensive end is a speed rusher. And so he tried to show that he could do some of that, and that's probably, but him being sick does throw that off there. Guys get sick at the combine, and I know that the Seahawks over the years have not shied away from taking guys who were sick or were unable to perform at the combine, thinking that scares other teams off and they're lean into their scouting and the importance that they place on pro days. My only worry for Trice is that he's not going to check the box as a potential outside rush linebacker for teams that run a 3-4, and I'm not sure if they're going to see him as big enough to be an end in that scheme, and that might narrow the number of teams that would consider him as a draft prospect. But he is a consistent producer. He just really, and playing as hard as he does and as many plays as he has over the past few years should speak to, like, there's a value in being part. He is clearly a part of a defensive line rotation to me. And that spells well for the most important thing, which is the length of the career. I also would say, like, I don't believe that Tuliasenoa, I would be surprised if he ends up getting drafted, but I very much think that he's someone who could have a long and successful NFL career, because that for whatever reason, teams don't tend to pay defensive tackles or draft them as highly as they do at other positions. But if you make the league and earn a spot for yourself, like, you can have a very long career without having much of a draft, without being considered a high-end draft pick.
Which of these guys from Washington's draft class are we going to be talking about as contributing, starting, star, whatever NFL players 5 years from now? Because that's more interesting to me than, like, where are they going to be picked? Because, mm-hmm. And so much of it depends on environment and surroundings. And, like, I've said before, probably a couple times, that, you know, in my time covering college football, I've never been as confident that a player is going to have a very good NFL career as I am that Romo Odunze will. But even then, he's a receiver. He needs a quarterback to throw him the ball. He needs to be in a system that's going to prioritize him. And if you're spending a top 10 pick on a guy like Romo Odunze, hopefully that's your plan. But, you know, in the quarterback throwing the ball to him, they need to have a pretty good offensive line to be able to throw the ball downfield and get it to him in situations where he can make plays. So, like, you can look at, you know, receiver or tight end and say, like, this guy's got Hall of Fame talent, but if the pieces aren't there around him, he's not going to get his numbers. So you're still kind of dependent on situation. But I would, you know, I'd be surprised, like, if we're setting odds on who's got the best chance to have, like, an 8 to 10 year NFL career, like, crazy high end, going to play for a long time NFL career. Who comes to mind from this draft class? I you know, feel like I'm not giving anything away by saying I think Romo Odunze is at the top of that list, but who else comes to mind for you?
Yeah, for sure Odunze. And I would say that one of the things that sticks out to me about Rome is that the perseverance he showed staying at Washington. And I'm not sure how many guys would have done that, because he was so underutilized in his first year on campus, and that offense was so bad, and then they changed coaches, that I'm not sure how many guys, and I could throw Jalen McMillan in there too, would have stuck it out that way. And it's not that I think that, oh, he's better off for having stuck it out, but I think that psychological makeup to be able to persevere through a less than optimum situation and to choose to, like, no, I like it here and I'm going to make this work. I think that suits, that bodes well for success at higher levels where you are going to find yourself, like, the chances that you find a less than optimum situation in the NFL are significantly higher than they are in college, just because there are fewer players and there are better players and they're grown ass men. So yeah, if I was going to take the one guy, it would be Rome, because he does everything. He doesn't shy away from any challenge. Like, the whole attitude he took at the combine, like, I'm going to go do everything. I think that mindset is something that makes you more resilient when it comes to dealing with the possibility that, or the likelihood that, you're going to end up in some tough spots, because the league is hard. I think Ulufoshio is going to be great. I really do. I know that he is a bit that you could sort of worry, like, okay, is he going to break down? And he has shoulder injury, which isn't great for a linebacker, but I think the speed that he plays at and the instincts that he has, and I think there are fewer and fewer really good inside linebackers. I think that that's a position. I think he's going to have a standout career. And I put Penix on that. I put Penix on that list too. If you're going to ask me the guys that I think that I think are going to be the best, in terms of longevity, Fautanu and Rosengarten, you are never going to go wrong betting or sort of forecasting for good offensive linemen to stay in the NFL. Like, that tends to be like defensive tackles and offensive linemen. Like if you're willing to put up with the misery that comes along with those positions, like you can play really as long as you want. It's a different aging curve for those players than it is for guys who that play on the outside.
Rosengarten, too, he's got a little bit of a head start age-wise. Like, he had 2 years of college eligibility left. He's leaving college after, I mean, still 4 years, which is about the amount of time you're supposed to be in college. But he's a little on the younger side for, like, a potential first, second-round offensive lineman. So, and Fautanu and Rosengarten, too, I don't know that either of those guys ever missed a game. I think they both were healthy their whole college careers. At least, you know, everybody's dealing with something, right? That's the eternal asterisk there. But I don't remember either of those guys ever dealing with like an injury that people knew about or that was gonna keep them out of a game or something. I could be misremembering there. But yeah, I mean, Fautanu is just such a great athlete, and you know, he moves so well and he's so quick and, you know, has done a good job taking care of his body, and he's always been in really good shape. And like, I don't think it'll be hard for him to keep the conditioning aspect of it up. You know, it just comes back to health, but those guys are off to a good start that way already. I think in terms of the physical toll, the further out from the line of scrimmage you go, you start to talk about guys being able to put together long careers. I'd be real surprised if 5 years from now we look up and Jalen Polk's out of the league. Mm-hmm. I think just his playing style, what he brings to a team, you know, he's not the most elite athlete, he's not a burner, but he's got great hands, he's an elite route runner, he's just very solid. You know what you're getting from him. He's a zero maintenance character guy. He was a real respected leader in Washington's locker room, and I just think he's one of those guys who you're gonna see going in the mid rounds of your fantasy draft every year for a long time. You know, is he ever gonna lead the league in receiving? I don't think so, but I think that guy is going to be an NFL receiver for a while.
How about Devin Culp? He's the wild card in my mind in this draft for the Washington players, in this sense that it's a draft that doesn't have, I mean, Brock Bowers is a top tier talent, but there's not the depth of tight ends that there has been in recent drafts. He had an absolutely bonkers 40 time. He's a big enough dude that teams are going to see him as, hey, he can be what they refer to as a Y tight end, which is somebody who can be the second tight end in a run heavy set, but he's got that speed. I could see Culp going as high as the third round. I think that's really unlikely. And if there hadn't been that 40 time at the combine, I would have said, hey, he's got a shot to get drafted, and that'd be awesome for him. I definitely believe he will be drafted now. The question is, does he really vault up? And he comes from a school that has a history of producing tight ends that have been really productive, whether they're touted or not in the NFL.
Would he be a fit in Seattle?
Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, his offensive coordinator's there, and I agree. I think he was a guy Washington coaches were really excited about. He was a three-star recruit, but he was over in Spokane doing everything, lining up in the Wildcat, running with the ball. I think his, like, he was slim enough then that his recruiting profile listed him as a receiver, I think, even though teams were recruiting him as a tight end. Originally committed to Oregon, wound up flipping, coming to Washington. I mean, they really thought like he could be a dude. That his speed and his athleticism and run after catch ability at that size, once he bulked up, if he could maintain all that, you know, while playing as a tight end sized tight end in the Power Five, that he could be a weapon. And I think you saw him start to reveal that potential last year a little bit. They never really did get him the ball in space a ton. And, you know, some of his issues with drops earlier in his career maybe made it like harder for coaches to be insistent that, hey, this is a guy we need to get the ball to and rely on in big situations to pick up yards. But I remember, I could probably go back and find it, but like the first podcast we did, I feel like after last spring, maybe it was spring a year ago or maybe last fall camp, I saw Devin Culp running with the ball in his hands in the open field, and I saw Cam Davis running with the ball in his hands in the open field, and thought, wow, those two guys look really fast. Those two guys look like they have gotten faster. I don't know that anyone would have guessed that Culp would go run a 4.47 at the combine, but he's always been a guy that, like, coaches, there's never been a question about his athleticism. It was just, hey, can he catch the ball consistently where you can depend on him as part of the passing game? It's interesting that Jack Westover really developed as the clear number one option, at least in terms of a receiver at tight end. He actually caught more passes last year than Jalen McMillan, which is a fun little bit of trivia about the 2023 Huskies. Westover's the one between those two who I would probably put a larger wager on being on a roster 5 years down the road. I just think he gives you so much in so many different aspects, and he could play special teams. He could play H-back, be a blocking fullback if there's a team that wants to incorporate a fullback. And I think he's just very solid in all areas. Also athletic, has shown you a little more on tape in terms of catching the ball and being dependable that way. But yeah, I mean, Devin Culp could be a guy whose best years come in the NFL. He could be a guy who you look back at his college career and you're like, man, this guy really started to figure out once he got to the pros, and it is going to be that athletic profile that gets him a look. Because you're right, whether, you know, I don't have a great enough handle on like team needs or whatever to be predicting, you know, oh, on day three, is he a fourth rounder? Is he a sixth rounder or whatever? But I just, somebody with his size who has put at least a couple of highlight reel catches on tape, who ran what he did at the combine, somebody is going to think that they can, I don't want to say fix him, there's nothing wrong with him, but like somebody's going to look at him and think this guy's ceiling is higher than whatever he put on tape in college.
It's not a comparable player, but it's kind of a similar trait. Luke Wilson, who was the Seahawks tight end, they drafted him out of Rice. And Vance McDonald was the starter for Rice. And I know the Seattle, Vance was drafted, he might have been in the first round or maybe it was the second round, but he was a pretty early draft pick, went to the 49ers. And Seattle's, the Seahawks' feeling was that, like, hey, Luke is every bit as good and could end up being a more productive player, in part because Luke ran exceptionally well for a tight end. And I definitely was surprised at Culp's speed, what his 40 time was. I mean, he's the fastest tight end at the combine. He also had two of the more incredible catches of the season. The throwing catch against USC where he caught that ball in the corner that Michael Penix threw, and when he threw it, I thought he was just hucking it out of bounds. Instead, he was throwing it back into the field of play, is one of the more remarkable throws and catches that I've seen in Husky football.
Well, especially for such a weak-armed quarterback.
Dude, it was so, like, the physics of both the throw and the catch are wild, because Penix is going out of bounds. So he's essentially throwing across his body to throw it back into the field of play, which is, when you do that, it's like, good luck, brother. That's how you throw interceptions. Like, you're not going to be able to get what you think on it. Instead, he puts it in this perfectly placed spot, and then Culp catches it while someone is essentially like yanking off one of his arms, and it's just his finger. It's just a wild, wild play. I do think that Jack Westover is going to be an exceptionally good pro player. I do wonder how many teams consider him a draftable player, but I also might be underestimating the degree to which he's able to run block. Like, I might be sort of assigning him as like, hey, he's more of a receiving tight end, when like actually he's a tougher blocker. I know for a fact that if he gets in an offense like San Francisco or Miami, or if he gets in that Houston offense, which is the coordinator's Bobby Slowick, and he comes from that same school, the numbers that he might put up as the quote unquote fullback that those guys use would be unbelievable. He could absolutely be a Pro Bowl player if he ends up in that system. I think that the number of teams that will consider Devin Culp is broader, and I think that Culp will get drafted before Westover, but I don't think that's necessarily a reflection on how they'll fare in their careers. I think it just, there are more teams that I believe are going to project Culp as someone who could be the quote unquote sleeper at tight end, like, even though he's not really going to be a sleeper because everybody knows how freaking fast he is now.
Over under on how many players between Troy Faiotanu and Michael Penix Jr. So basically, we're going to set the over-under at 0.5 or 1.5. Who will still be on the board when the Seahawks pick at 16?
Well, so do you want to do it when the Seahawks are going to pick, or when the 16th pick happens? Because those might be two different things.
Leah, let's say when 16 is on the clock.
I think Penix is there at 16, and I think Faiotanu is gone. So would that be 0.5?
If that happens, are you like are you sitting there like, just take Penix, take it?
Oh,
I
want to
see that. Like, because this is my take on this. Like, I don't care enough about the Seahawks to really get into like what's the prudent move for them in the first round with their first round pick. Should they take this position or that position? Should they trade back? I want them to take Michael Penix Jr. because it will make them more interesting. Like, to me, just to me individually.
Which,
like,
is,
if I'm home on a Sunday, the Seahawks are on. I generally know what's going on with them. I follow them. I read coverage, all these things. But it's not must-see programming for me. I mean, especially this lull kind of era that they're in where they're not a championship contender. If Michael Penix Jr. is their well, maybe he's not their starter right away, right? That'd be a different conversation with Geno and what do they do there. But if they draft Michael Penix Jr., like, I'm paying closer attention to the Seahawks, because Penix playing for Ryan Grubb again in the pros, and they've, you know, they've deemed him worthy of actually using a mid first rounder on, like, I would want to see how that goes. I want it to happen for that reason, for my own kind of entertainment value,
which is the best way to view sports. Like, I'm going to hop back up, yes, on my soapbox and say this, that I went on my economist rant earlier. That's the way I tend to look at the sports I cover. That's not the way that a normal, rational human being should be. It should be what you're going to enjoy. And yeah, I think the idea of getting excited, would I be excited if the Seahawks drafted Michael Penix? Yes. I want to see what will happen. I would be more excited for that than I would for Bo Nix, but I'd also be excited if they drafted Bo Nix, of like, exactly how is this going to play out? I do want to see and think that using a first round pick on a quarterback is a really good idea. I don't expect Seattle to do it. And that has more to do with the trends that they've already acquired Sam Howell than it does with the most important thing, which is, would you enjoy watching this? Would this be exciting for you? So I do think if Seattle's standing there at 16, I do think Penix is going to be available. I think that Seattle's going to trade down, and I don't think they'll take Penix, so I don't want to. But that's not what I think they should do. I'd love to see it happen. Be really interesting. I want to see
if they took him. Would they bring Grubb out for the draft day?
100%
press conference to talk about him.
The Seahawks love trotting people out at draft day, like, and it's
oh yeah,
for good reason.
The area scout.
Oh, for good reason, man. Like, it's the, you will, after picking a player, it is like freshly fallen snow. Like, when you look out, you get up in the morning and you're 9 years old and you open your curtains and you look out and it has snowed 4 inches the night before. And that snow out there in your yard is just a pristine, unbroken field of fluffy white goodness. That's what
a beautiful, beautiful James Carpenter.
As the moment that you pick it, it should just be all expectation and hyperbole. Bring them all out. Say what you're going to do. Hey, we're going to get them, let them go out and compete. Like, these are the easiest press conferences to have. We're really excited about the things he does. We've got a coach that has a lot of familiarity with him. We don't know how this is going to go out, but we feel really good about the competition we have at quarterback. And these guys are going to challenge and help each other and learn from it. Like, those are the easiest press conferences to win. So yeah, I think there would be. And then that becomes a question of, okay, you've got an offensive coordinator who's going to have a great deal of familiarity with what we know one of the players is able to do, and some, a guy who made the Pro Bowl a couple years ago in Geno Smith, and someone who's kind of got a wild hair in Sam Howell. That'd be a really fun thing to follow for the next 2 years of who's going to be the long-term quarterback for this team.
See, I would just want to hear Grubb talk about how he stood on the table for Penix, and that he was insistent from the day he took this job that, you know, he was going to get his guy in there. Like, I would just want to hear what Grubb said about his role in the process. Cause I don't know how much they're, you know, John Schneider's leaning on the new OC's familiarity with some of these guys. I don't have a great understanding of how that works, but like, I would be curious to, and like, also, you know, if they took Bo Nix or something, you know, that'd be, especially with, like, if Penix were still on the board and they took another quarterback, like, that, I'd be curious to hear Grubb's take on that too.
Yeah. Now, that's where you would be disappointed, because what they'll say is incredibly boring. And it's always a decision made of consensus. And we hoped he was going to be available. And we didn't know. And there was a united front. And we all believe in this guy. Now, the one thing with Penix is Penix does have more value to the Seahawks than he does to other teams in this regard, is you do have an offensive coordinator and a line coach that are familiar with him. Like, that is an asset. And given the way that Penix played the past 2 years, like, there's no way you're going to tell me that that's anything other than, oh God, like, we already have gone through the learning process with him. We know what he does extremely well. And so there is a bit of a boost. Now, on the flip side, they've already put a certain amount of investment into quarterbacks, both with Smith, which is less important, but with going out and trading for Howell. But by no means have they broken the bank or sort of made such a big investment that it would preclude them taking a quarterback.
I want to, before we get to Ian, who I don't know if he has a Penix take or not, I want to throw Dominique Hampton into the Devin Culp bucket of could be remembered as a better pro than a college player. Think that with his size and his athleticism at that size, that if he can get in the right system and a situation where there's no established starter and he's got a chance to contribute on special teams and maybe get a crack to play some safety early in his career, like, I think he's a guy who could end up being that same kind of guy. Not to say anything about where I think he's going to get drafted or if he'll get drafted or those sort of things, but I just think he's somebody who was getting better, maybe took a little longer to develop than some people were anticipating, because he burst onto the scene and had this just like amazing fall camp his true freshman year while he was redshirting and kind of waiting his turn, and he got moved around, started him at corner and moved him to safety and kind of got in Jimmy Lake's doghouse and took a while to get out of it, and didn't play, you know, on the best secondary the last 2 years, didn't make like a ton of really memorable plays, was just kind of solid, and it just seems like he's another guy who is still on an upward trajectory, and if he gets in the right situation could end up having a pretty solid pro career.
Nobody's approval rating has rocketed up more from the final 5 minutes of the Apple Cup to where it is now than Dominique Hampton, of first to have the penalty for the jumping over the blocking assignment on the field goal. Have that basically be not nullified, but didn't matter because the Huskies still won. To the way they played in the postseason, to how he performed at the scouting combine, where I've always liked Hampton because of how he hits. I love thumpers, man. I love big hitting safeties, and he hits a ton. But yeah, that's a good inclusion because he's very much, I fully expect him to get drafted. I would be shocked if he didn't, and I could see him going in the fourth or fifth round.
You do prefer that those big hits occur before the whistle, or at least in conjunction with the whistle.
Are you familiar with the concept of shrinkage or breakage?
I am.
That's kind of how I view Hampton's hits. Is like, yeah, you're gonna have to pay the price for having him on your team. And if that's three personal fouls a year, I'm willing to make that transaction. I'm willing to write those off as the cost of doing business with a meat-eating carnivore of a safety.
Well, one of those took him out of commission for like half a season.
It did.
In 2021.
It did. Yes, that's true. So. It's very fair. It's very fair. But like I said, the bigger the hit, the bigger the risk. And yes. I'm going to make the exchange because I'm a bloodthirsty savage.
He's grown since then. What does our old pal IP McFarland have for us this week?
Good morning. I hope you guys have recovered from the 100th episode. I know many of us woke up with, you know, that little regret you always have after a party like that the next day. I'm sure Christian's was a little deeper because he outwardly cheated at my takes question, suggesting takes that were not only in print and not in the podcast, but actually predated the podcast entirely. So I hope you're moving on. I hope you can get through this recording in the next couple, despite your lives functionally being over. You've recorded 100 and that's about it. I had a whole other thing planned. I had a deeply off-season question that became relevant, and I had little bits. I had shots at beloved former players that people overhype that rhyme with rape talker. I had stuff. But then I realized upon release, this is going to be the night of the NFL draft, and we got to talk about that. Last year, about this time, I asked you who on the 2023 Huskies team would be drafted first. Unfortunately, there's not an easily accessible catalog of all the back episodes of this show, so I can't go do the research to hear what you said, but I think one of you said Braylon Trice, one of you said Rome Odunze. One of you is going to come out looking decidedly better. My question is, who's going to tumble? Lots of people are predicting Michael Penix. I don't think that's necessarily a shocking tumble, and I think the general grading of second round is going to be pretty accurate. Might be a little higher, might be a little lower, but it's not going to be like he's sitting in the green room waiting for his name to be called. I actually think Latu is going to be the biggest faller in the draft. I haven't heard anybody writing about that, but I think his injury history is going to scare some folks off, and he may hit a round that most weren't expecting. But who's the Huskies player that unfortunately is not going to be picked as highly as they might like, and maybe even along with that, who's going to go undrafted and make a roster? I always love those stories. Hope you guys have a good week, and I'll probably forget the off-season question I had planned for next week. But just trust me, there were some killer locker jokes in there, and the listening audience is worse off for not hearing them, even if I'm the only person who is laughing at my own joke. Have a great week. Go Dawgs.
I don't know that I would anticipate a slide for any of the like potential first, second, third round guys. I mean, Braylon Trice, we've already kind of talked about. I guess you could put Penix on that list. I mean, just because the idea of him as like a mid-first rounder in terms of the media talking about it is relatively new, and you never know how legit that is. And, it, you know, to say nothing of like what he deserves or where he should be picked, or are these teams missing on him or not? Like, I just wonder if the expectation has now been set that he'll go higher than anybody was sort of expecting a month ago. And so now if he doesn't, that'll be perceived as a slide. So I would put him in that category just for that reason. That like, if the QB needy teams that might take him in the you know, the early part of the draft don't, then you kind of get into that waiting game. Well, okay, well, like, where's he going to go now? If all this buzz about him being a mid first rounder wasn't accurate, you know, Zion Tupuola-Fatui might be in that category. He had the shoulder surgery right after the season and wasn't able to work out at the combine. Wasn't able to work out at pro day. I talked to him for an exit interview last week or 2 weeks ago, and he said he was, you know, getting closer to being able to do everything workout wise, and, you know, was you know, understood that he's a day three guy, and away he goes after that. But you talked about ZTF as maybe being the more desirable pro prospect than Braylon Trice, just for kind of what he brings speed wise off the edge and the way he can bend and those things. Before the season, he didn't have the super productive senior year. And then obviously, you know, he was playing through the shoulder injury all season and had to get that fixed. Do you still see his stock as being such that he'd get drafted, or do you think he might have to go the undrafted free agent route?
I think it's possible. He'll end up going undrafted. I do think if he gets picked, it will be day three. It will be rounds 4 through 7. I would tend to, I think he'll get picked, but that's, I'm not sort of passionate or like convinced of that in the same way. I believe Devin Culp will get picked. I believe Dominique Hampton will get picked. It's tough when a player doesn't get evaluated at all in the after the season in the draft run up, and with ZTF, his best season is 2020, right? Like, that would be the point where we would say, like, when was he most his most productive? And that's a little way. Am I right about that, or is it 2019?
Well, I mean, 2020 was what really put him on the map. Three games, the COVID season,
yes,
the empty stadium.
So he had screwed up. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. Like, when I was talking to him, I was like, was the USC game then, like, with the strip sack of Caleb Williams, like, is that your career highlight? And he's like, well, that's up there. But he's like, Utah in 2020, you know, I had 3 sacks and we had the comeback. And I was like, man, I was like completely filed that whole season out of my memory.
So that was when he had his most impactful time, and we saw his speed off the edge. It's not like I think he's a worse football player since then, but he's not as well-rounded a defensive lineman as Braylon Trice is. I don't think you have the same feeling or level of confidence in him stopping the run, but he does his speed off the edge. That is an incredibly desirable trait. So that's why I would say I expect him to get drafted. And I also think that the most important thing for him, and I mean, for so many of the players, the draft is not the end, but the beginning. And it's where you go from there. ZTF's career is not going to be determined by whether he is a 5th or a 7th round pick this year. It's going to be determined about what happens when he gets those opportunities, and when he does get a chance to play special teams, and when he does get those opportunities in pass rush situations, is he able to make an impact? And I think, having watched him as a player, he absolutely does. and that play, the strip sack of Caleb Williams, like showed the athleticism that he has out on the edge. But if he didn't end up getting drafted, that wouldn't shock me either. That's not going to be the end of or spell a disaster in terms of what his pro prospects are.
I won't even try to forecast Dylan Johnson's draft prospects. Like, it just seems like if you're not like a generational first round running back, which there are so few of anymore, then who knows, right? Like, why was Miles Gaskin a seventh rounder and other guys who were picked in the sixth round ahead of him sixth rounders? And just seems like at that position, it's so hard, you know, so dependent on staying healthy and finding the right fit and being able to do all kinds of different things, right? Can you contribute on special teams? Can you pass protect? That's a huge thing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not necessarily expecting him to get drafted. I wouldn't say that he does or doesn't have a better or worse chance than anybody else. I mean, it just seems like the dime a dozen nature of the way that position is treated in the NFL makes it really hard to forecast his potential longevity, other than the fact that he is somebody who is just always kind of dealing with some kind of injury. And I wonder if that's something he can remedy or work through at the pro level.
Or if that shows that his ability to play through injuries, which all running backs have to deal with. Seattle, when they drafted Rashad Penny, he was the healthiest a running back could possibly be coming out of college. Like, if you're going to look at, hey, you want to avoid injury, like, he was as healthy as you can get, and he was chronically injured for the Seahawks. And what that says to me, and those sort of things, is that pretty much everybody gets hurt in the NFL, especially running backs. And that's one of the reasons that it is so difficult to forecast the success of running backs. I'm going to go back to big-brained economists, because if you look at the different positions and which spots down the road success is most tightly correlated with which round they are picked in, running backs are at the very bottom. Quarterbacks, wide receivers are very much toward the top. It is more likely, doesn't mean it is likely, but it's more likely that a player drafted in the first round at quarterback, wide receiver is going to be more successful than a quarterback or wide receiver that's drafted in the fourth round compared to the seventh round. Like, there's a more linear relationship. Running backs, it's not that way at all. And one of the reasons is health, and the other reason is that I don't think there's any position on the field that is more dependent on other people doing their jobs or doing their jobs well than running back. And so I would be surprised if Dylan Johnson gets drafted. I would be equally and maybe even more surprised if he's not on an NFL roster come next September when the regular season begins, because I think he's a really tough football player who plays a really demanding position, and I think that he'll find his way onto a team next season.
Do you have any thoughts about how spring practice has gone?
I just got my eye on the portal, man. Like, it's such a weird, strange phenomenon of, I don't, like, I'm excited. So I've found myself teasing myself with the idea of maybe this freshman quarterback, the little dynamo, could be something that someone we see sooner rather than later. Like, I'm excited reading about that. I definitely have enjoyed reading about and learning some of the different staff members of this coaching staff. I do think Jed Fish put together a really good coaching staff. But when it comes to personnel, I am fixated and more fixated on the transfer portal, and I feel kind of guilty about that because it violates pretty much every tenet I have in my college football fandom, which is you focus on the guys that are on the team, not who you hope might be there. And I don't know if I feel less dirty about it because they're not high school kids or what, Christian, but I'm a covetous little bastard right now.
Well, look, man, their season hinges on it, literally. So, like, they cannot not take several more transfers. It's not an option. Like, they, especially on the offensive line, blah, blah, blah. We know. Look, I'm just trying to get through the season without writing cornerbacks coach John Richardson as Jason Richardson.
Oh, because yeah.
It's I've come close a couple times now, and I've just got Jason Richardson jammed in there. It's going to happen at some point, so accept my apology in advance.
And yeah, I could see that. I could see that being very, very tough. Yeah, the whole trying to figure out who's going to be there, and every time a guy goes into the transfer portal from Washington, I go to this. Well, he probably just wasn't a fit of what they're looking for. And anytime a player like is mentioned as potentially coming to Washington, I'm like, oh, that's right. We're going to get some quality in here because the opportunities. I am the biggest idiot homer right now. I fully recognize, and it is all of the things that I used to somewhat observe or slash complain about with fans of as soon as a guy's let go. Well, you know, he was overpaid and overpriced. And as soon as you sign somebody, it was like, do you see how many people wanted him? They went out and got that job done to land him. It showed you how great everything is. I've become exactly that kind of non-thinking fan.
And if they're connected to a recruit and he ends up going somewhere else, it's because they decided they didn't want him.
Wasn't a good fit. Wasn't the best fit.
Yeah.
He saw a path to play. Yeah, he's going to get on the field somewhere sooner, and that was important to him. And it's more competition here. He wanted to go somewhere where it would be easier to get on the field.
I still love reading recruiting coverage of like, oh, so-and-so team or so-and-so coach is on a run. They're landing all these 4 and 5 stars, and there's just like no mention of NIL at all. And it, like, I don't say that as a value judgment of any kind. Like, it leads me to another thought I've had, which is that fans get really defensive about claims that they're only getting recruits because of NIL, which is so strange to me.
Yeah.
Is it like they still need to believe that said recruit picked their school and for the coaching staff and for the opportunity, and like, which I do still think a lot of recruits do. Like, I don't know, everybody doesn't prioritize money, but it's just like you wouldn't want your school to be thought of as behind in the NIL race, but you also don't want to accept the fact that NIL was the leading factor for any recruit. It needs to be because the school was amazing and blah, blah, blah. It's just kind of funny.
Is there, I'm going to use more, big brain economist lingo, is there an arbitrage opportunity here if you fully leaned into the yes, we're going to pay more than every other school? Because you're right, there is a level of incongruity between people and fans who don't want to admit that money plays a big part of it, and then the NIL collective is saying like, we need to get our ass in gear because these other places are money whipping guys and we need to have the war chest to be able to do it. Maybe if you fully leaned into it SMU style. That's right, you want to be rich, come here. Back up the Briggs truck, baby.
Speaking of improper inducements, Reggie Bush got his Heisman back.
That's the funniest thing. And then I saw Johnny Manziel on Twitter. That dude,
he's been leading the charge.
That dude is the biggest schmuck. It's hard for me to adequately describe what an absolute scammer I think that dude is. Like, he's going on these, basically his media tours are now about how unseriously he took the NFL, as if that's a commentary on anyone other than him. And it's just like, there are very few figures in college football that I want to hear less from than Johnny Heisman.
Is Emmanuel Acho on that list?
Yeah. He's an unfortunate fellow. What was the last one I saw of his? Oh, it was the comparison between Angel Reese and Courage the Cowardly Dog, which predictably did not go over well. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the man Nacho.
Discourse.
I do think we're in the final days of Skip Bayless.
Really? What makes you say that?
His declining relevancy. I think it's a 50-50 call whether he's still on the air on Fox when NFL season starts. He might get one more season, but I can pretty much guarantee he will not have a Speak for Your Pizza show on in 2025 when the football season starts. Like the gasping fumes. I think it's done run its course. I think him losing Shannon Sharpe, I think the dishes are done for him.
It's so strange to me that anybody watches that, derives any entertainment from those just shouting over each other weird sports takes shows. But
dude, it's
to each their own.
It's not that anybody, it's the dominant form of sports media right now. All the dudes that make money are doing that. It's wild.
It's weird. It's and Skip has always insisted that he's earnest, and it's not, he doesn't have the takes, you know, for the entertainment of like everything he says he believes in. And yeah,
would you like him more or less? Because that's, he has always maintained that he is a good faith it's not an act. He really believes it. And I, for the life of me, have a hard time deciding what I respect him more or less. If it is an entire act and he's just fully committed to the bit, or if his brain really does work that way and there's so little self-awareness that he doesn't actually realize. Like, I'm not sure which of those is more pathetic.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd respect it more if it were an act. Because you're doing it to get the money. The idea that a person would be as unhinged as he is on so many different topics. But okay, the show is one thing. What about the like weird cowboy fan wearing a cowboy's jersey, like Twitter videos he posts? Like, are those earnest? Are those genuine? Because that's a little, that whole thing is strange too.
I think it's more likely that the videos are earnest than the entire sort of TV shtick is earnest. But I think it's possible. Well, I think it's possible both are totally earnest.
We're always earnest here at Say Who Say Pod. How's that for a segue?
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy the remnants of spring practice. Spring game a week from Friday night at Husky Stadium. Jed Fish expects 40,000. So every one of you that doesn't show is working against the goal.
Get out there and support the dogs.
We'll talk to you next week.
Say who?
Say pod.